So reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 2, text 11. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Kim Sambritam Arucharayor Dvija Shringayos Te Maje Krisho Vahase Yatra Drishihi Ashrita Me Panko Arunaha Surabir Atma Vishana Idrig Yenashramam Subhaga Me Surabhi Karoshi Him Samritam Ruchirayor Dvija Sringayos Te Madhye Krisho Vahasi Yatra Drishi Shrita Me Panko Runa Surabhi Ratma Vishana Hidrig Yena Shramam Subhagame Surabhi Kurusi Kim Sambritam Ruchirayor Dvija Sringayoste Madhye Krisho Vahasi Yatra Drishi Shritame Pango Runa Surabhi Atma Vishana Hidrig Yena Shravam Subhagame Surabhi Karoshi Him Sangritang Uchirayor Dvija Sringayos Te Madhye Krisho Vahasi Yatra Drishi Shritame Pango Runa Surabhi Atma Vishana Hidrig Yena Shramam Subhagame Surabhi Karoshi
Sambritam Ruchirayor Dvija Sringayoste Krishovahasi Yatra Rishi Shritame.
Bhagye Krishovahasi Yatra Rishi Shritame.
Ankoruna Sura Viratma Vishana Ivi.
Ankoruna Sura Viratma Vishana Ivi.
Yena
shramam subhagame surabhi karoshi.
Ladies. Not exactly a class for brahmacharis, but anyway. When you hear the translation, you'll understand. Kim? What? Sangritam? Filled. Uchirayoho? Very beautiful. Dvija? Oh, brahmanam. Shingayoho? Within two horns. Te, your. Maje, in the middle. Krishaha, thin. Vahase, you are carrying. Yatra, wherein. Drishahi, eyes. Shrita, attached. Me, my. Pankaha, powder. Arunaha, red. Suravihi, fragrant. Atma Vishane, on the two horns. Idrik, such. Yena, by which. Ashramam, place of residence. Subhaga, O most fortunate one. May, my. Surabhi Karoshi, you are perfuming. You can tell it's very romantic here. So we'll read the translation. Agnidra then praised Purvachiti's raised breasts. He said, my dear Brahmana, your waist is very thin. Yet with great difficulty you are carefully carrying two horns to which my eyes have become attracted. What is filling those two beautiful horns? You seem to have spread fragrant red powder upon them, powder that is like the rising morning sun. O most fortunate one, I beg to inquire where you have gotten this fragrant powder that is perfuming my ashram, my place of residence. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anidra appreciated Purvachiti's raised breasts. After seeing the girl's breasts, he became almost mad. Nevertheless, he could not recognize whether Purvachiti was a boy or a girl, for as the result of his austerity, he saw no distinction between the two. He therefore addressed her with the word Dvija, O Brahmana. Yet why should a Dvija, a Brahmana boy, have horns on his chest? Because the boy's waist was very thin, Agnidra thought he was carrying the horns with great difficulty, and therefore they must be filled with something very valuable. Otherwise, why would he carry them? When a woman's waist is thin and her breasts are full, she looks very attractive. Agnidra, his eyes attracted, contemplated the heavy breasts on the girl's thin body and imagined how her back must sustain them. Agnidra imagined that her raised breasts were two horns she had covered with cloth so that others would not see the valuables within them. Agnidra, however, was very anxious to see them. Therefore, he requested, "Please uncover them so that I can see what you are carrying. Rest assured that I shall not take it away. If you feel an inconvenience in removing this covering, I can help you. I myself can uncover them and to see what valuable things those raised horns contain." He was also surprised to see the red dust of perfumed kumkum spread over her breasts. Nevertheless, still considering Purvachiti a boy, Agnidra addressed her as Subhaga, most fortunate Muni. The boy must have been fortunate. Otherwise, how simply by standing there could he perfume Agnidra's entire ashram? Kim samritam ruchirayor dvija sringayos te madje krishova hasiyatra drishi shritame panko runa surabhi atma vishana hidrig in ashramam subagame surabhi karoshi. So, let's see. Om gana timiranda sha. Gananjana shlakeya chakshur unmilitam yena tosmai shi gurave namaha. So, this particular verse reminds me of a story from the Valmiki Ramayan. And this is, of course, the famous Rishi Sringa's story. I think many of you may know this story. So I'll tell the story anyway, even if you know it. So, once upon a time, there was King Dasarath. And Dasarath, of course, is the father of Shri Ram. And Dasarath wanted a son. And he could not obtain a son. And so he had this, wanted to have this ceremony performed, Putra Kameshti ceremony. That means to get a nice son. He had previously had a daughter. And he gave his daughter the name Shanti. Shanti means peaceful in Sanskrit. And so he wasn't Shanti because he didn't have a son. But he gave his daughter away to another king who had a son but no daughter. And that was King Romapad. And he was called Romapad because he had hairy feet. That's what Romapad means. Like we have Romanchakam Pashru Taranga Bhaja, means someone who chants Hare Krishna ecstatically, the guru, his hair stands on, and so Romancha. So anyway, so he gave Shanti away, and he was still thinking, you know, I want a son. So he had this Putra Kameshti ceremony performed, but in order to perform it, it required someone who had never seen a woman his whole life before. And there was a question, who had never seen a woman his whole life before? I mean, most of us have had mothers. Even nowadays, of course, I guess they have test tube babies now. Children are born, you know, in test tubes, out of glass capsules or something like that. So, but in those days, and traditionally we all have mothers, don't we? I think you all knew your mother. So it'd be hard if you go around the room. Is anyone here, especially the men, obviously the women have seen women, but if any men never seen a woman your whole life, raise your hand. Actually, the religion that I was raised in, they used to keep the women in a separate room with a curtain on it so the men couldn't see it. It's interesting. During the ceremony, the religious ceremony, it was like a more sophisticated burqa, where you put a burqa over the whole room. So, anyway, so he was thinking, you know, how can I find a man who's never seen a woman his whole life, you know, a Brahmin who was trained up. And then it was, the information was given to him. There was this one sage, his name was Rishi Sringa. And Rishi Sringa was a sage who had a deer horn on his head. There's an interesting story about that. Because his father, what happened was there was his father was meditating, trying to avoid any problems with ladies. And Heavenly Society girl came, just like Purvachiti mentioned here. And she attracted him, but he wasn't interested in her, so he somehow or other gave his bodily fluid to a deer, and the deer gave birth to a boy with a horn on his head. Therefore, he's called Rishi Sringa. So his father was so, let's say, anti-women, he was a real chauvinist. You know, much more than any other religious people today, he was a chauvinist. He said that he basically banned even the female animals from the forest. So the poor male deer, they're called bucks, were there, and the male cockroaches and the male, they only allowed males in the forest. Of course, that meant there were no children, and as a result, probably there were no animals after a little while in the forest. So he basically didn't want his son to see any women. He said, you know, this, I had trouble. So I want to protect my son. Just like sometimes you see people want to do that with the brahmacharis. If some brahmachari thinks of getting married, they immediately send him away to the North Pole where there's no women. Actually, to India. But anyway, because India is filled with women, too. I mean, you can't, what can you do? So, just like in New York, many years ago when Prabhupada was on the planet, the brahmacharis banned the women from chanting japa in the temple room. They, you know, as soon as Mangalarti was over, get out! And then, you know, I guess, it's pretty cruel. And when Prabhupada heard that, he got very upset. He said, they've invented something new. If they really want to avoid women, why are they in New York? You know, because as soon as you walk out the door, you know, there's people, all sorts of people, men, women, cross-dressers, everything imaginable in New York. It's like a smorgasbord. You know, you get anything you want in New York. So Prabhupada chastised them, and eventually they let the ladies back in the temple. And then in Los Angeles also, they banned the women to the back of the temple because they didn't want the brahmacharis to see the women, so they put them all the way in the back. And that was the last temple to allow the ladies to come in front to see the deities. Last temple that is gone. So, anyway, this getting back to the story. So, Rishi Sringa's father, he was thinking, let me protect my son in the same way. So, his son never saw a woman when he was young. So, he was very peaceful. And the father was thinking, now I've saved my son from being entangled in this world. But at the same time, this King Romapad, who I mentioned before, who had the daughter of Dasarath, he needed to bring Rishi Sringa to his kingdom. And the reason he needed to bring Rishi Sringa to his kingdom was that his kingdom had experienced a drought. Drought means no rain. You know, there was no rain and everybody was starving because there were no vegetables. And so he was thinking, I have to do a sacrifice, and the only way I can do the sacrifice is to bring someone who's never seen a woman before, which is Rishi Sringa. So he was thinking, how can I bring him? And his father, Rishi Sringa's father, has a bad temper. You know, if I try to bring Rishi Sringa to my kingdom, his father is going to curse me. So he was all bewildered. And then he came up with a plan. He thought, well, Rishi Sringa has never seen a woman before. So if we send a woman, he won't know it's a woman. And we can sort of have her attract him back to the kingdom. And so he thought, well, let's call for the most beautiful women in the kingdom. So he put on a message on the internet. Not really. And all the beautiful ladies came, you know. I guess actually the ladies were not that chaste. They came. And he said, which one of you want this mission? And the most beautiful girl of all came forward and said, I'll do it, no problem. He'll come back with me. But I need a lot of money to arrange for a floating ashram on the river. So he set up like a whole island that floated. It was an ashram on the river. And she dressed like a brahmachari, and the rest of her friends, because she didn't go alone, they dressed like brahmacharis. So they floated down the river to where this Rishi Sringa was. That is, ashram is of his father. And they waited till his father went out to get firewood or something like that. All right. So then this girl came, and she came to the ashram of Rishi Sringa, and she said hi or something like that. And Rishi Sringa thought, I'm a sannyasi, I don't know about these things. But Rishi Sringa thought, oh, here's the brahmachari. Just like the story here. What a good-looking brahmachari. I've never seen a brahmachari like that before. So he said, please accept my obeisances. And she said, in my country, we offer obeisances like this, hug. So he thought, well, this is a better type of obeisances. Really ecstatic. But he didn't know what he was getting into. He just thought, well, it's a nice brahmachari. You know, looks a little different, but, you know. Brahmachari from different countries. People have different colored skin. They look a little bit different. You know, that's life. So, but then she heard his father coming. So Rishi Sringa's father was coming. She said, I got to go, Prabhu. And so she ran away. And then the father, he saw Rishi Sringa was acting a little strangely. You know, it's like someone in love. You know, it was just like his eyes were rolling at the sockets. And he was just, you know, with this stupid smile on his face. Even in, remember this song when I was young, when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. And the scientists have actually analyzed that when people are in love, the brain scan is like someone who is taking cocaine. It looks exactly the same when you do an MRI or something on someone's brain. So that's also why Jaya Sri Sri Panchatattva, why people have to be very, very careful with marriages. And traditionally, of course, the marriages were arranged because usually when people fall in love, they fall in love for the wrong reasons without considering who's compatible, who's not compatible. So compatibility is very important in arranging marriages. Because, you know, people can look at each other's eyes and say, you know, I love you forever, you know, it's eternal and every like thing like that. But then 3 weeks later, they're throwing pots and pans at each other. So compatibility is most important. So anyway, so Rishi Sringa was there, you know, all bewildered. His father said, I think I know what happened, and he was very protective of Rishi Sringer, but one day again he let his guard down, and this lady dressed as a brahmachari came back, said to Rishi Sringer, please come to my ashram, and he was just like, you know, Pied Piper, you ever heard this story? The Pied Piper, he played a flute and all the boys followed him. He's like a perverted reflection of Krishna. So anyway, so this Rishi Sringer follower, they floated down to the kingdom of Romapad, and then immediately it started raining, which is solved Romapad's problem. But he was actually thinking that now I'm going to be in trouble because Rishi Sringer's father is going to curse me. So what he did is he arranged to give the whole kingdom to Rishi Sringer, so when the father came really angry, he heard, oh, this kingdom belongs to your son. So he thought, well, at least he's gained a kingdom. He may be married, but he has a whole kingdom too, so it's worth it. So, in this way, that was the story of Rishi Sringer, and Rishi Sringer later on went with Dasarath and performed the Putra Kameshti ceremonies so that Dasarath could have his sons headed up by Lord Ramchandra. So that story is in the Valmiki Ramayana. Very nice story. So, anyway, so you see how bewildering it is, and you can't really protect people from illusion by separating them from the sense objects. That's the point. So the question is, there's two points I want to touch on today, is like a different point, but first of all, touch on the point is, the question is, how can we become aloof from the sense objects? And I'm not just talking about men and women and things like that, but there's other sense objects too, like the tongue has its sense objects, you know, food, the ears, you know, so much music, we like to listen to rap music or whatever, rock and roll, whatever, or even the singing of birds. Of course, it's interesting, when you hear the singing of the birds, of course the bird singing is very beautiful, but they're actually just asking questions, you know, where's food, where's a female bird, you know, or a male bird, or whatever. It's just like eating, sleeping, mating, defending. Like the Bhagavatam says, that everybody's always asking questions. But they're asking questions about eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So that's what you're listening to. In Govardhan, they have these birds that laugh. Have you ever heard the birds in Govardhan? Anyone there ever heard them? They're laughing birds. I recorded them. It's very nice. And I don't know what they're laughing at. But it's also eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So in other words, we're attracted to things that are ears or eyes, a beautiful sunset, you know, or the, like it gets warm weather once in a while here, and you can go swimming. You know, there's all sorts of sense gratification. So how do you really remain aloof from that? How do you get detached from this body? And of course, we do understand in Krishna consciousness that the attachment to the body is one of the basic causes, not the ultimate cause, but one of the basic causes of suffering. The Buddhists also understand that. The Buddhist rules are, the first principle is, you know, material existence is suffering, we agree. Second principle is, suffering is caused by attachment. The third principle is, give up the attachment, give up the suffering. And the fourth principle is the Buddhist way, you know, the Eightfold Path is the way to do that. So how do we give up attachment to the body? It basically, it's impossible to give it up. So I hate to discourage all of you. However, it is possible to get attached to something else. In other words, you can't do a don't. Like if you say to another brahmachari, don't be attached to your body. It doesn't work. I tried it many times. Get out of Maya. Every time you try to do a negative, it further pushes the person away from you. Get out of Maya. You're too attached. I remember there was one sannyasi many years ago. He's no longer a sannyasi. But he would go outside the Los Angeles temple and have a speaker on his van, and he would yell out to the grahasas, you're all so attached. All that did was they got angry with him. It didn't help him in his spiritual life. Of course, attachment and repulsion are both signs of the same thing. The same coin, like heads or tails on the same coin. So the way we become detached is that we become attached. And there's different stages of attachment for us that help us become detached. We become attached to pleasing the spiritual master. We become attached to the processes of bhakti. We become attached, of course, to the holy names. We become attached to the other devotees. I mean, there's all sorts of things we should concentrate on being attached to. We're not Buddhists. We're not impersonalists. So we should have attachments. And even the attachments that we have that in one sense can be considered material can be purified or transformed. I was speaking to one lady the other day. She said, what about my attachment to my children? And I said, you can purify that and turn it to spiritual attachment. Because you become attached to your children for giving them Krishna consciousness. Not attached to them so you can enjoy them like pets. Many times people nowadays, in the modern world, they have children. It's a pretty expensive hobby, as they said, you know. They have children, and then the whole day long they have the children in daycare, you know, they don't really take care of the children. And I remember actually even when I was young, my father worked so hard. I saw my mother all the time, and I became rebellious. But my father worked so hard that actually he came back at 10 o'clock at night after I was sleeping. So I joke sometimes that after about 10 years, I asked my mother who that man was in the house. That's a joke. It wasn't actually that bad. But in other words, if someone's going to have children, they should be attached to raising them in a Krishna conscious way, keeping them healthy and all those other things that are connected with Krishna. So, and we can become attached to prasadam, eating prasadam. So there's ways to purify even the attachments that are keeping us in the material world. Does everybody understand that? That's a very important point. Even the attachments that are, the very same thing, like the example given in the Vedic literatures is that a thorn can be removed by a thorn. So the very same attachments, like between men and women, can actually be purified and bring one to the spiritual world. I mean, if one is married, for example, if one's attached to bringing their wife to Krishna, or their husband, bringing their husband to Krishna, as the case may be, then that attachment is Krishna conscious attachment. But in each and every relationship, we have to examine whether our attachment is taking us down or bringing us up. For example, even if a spiritual master becomes attached to his disciples in a material way, oh, they're giving me so much dakshin is mine today, so much more will I have tomorrow. He's my disciple, I have conquered. And anyway. You know, you can see anything or you can have any relationship in a material way if you don't have the right consciousness. So you can purify what would ostensibly be a material relationship, or you can putrefy, that's the opposite, you can make a spiritual relationship material. Like if the spiritual master, like I said, enjoys the facility given by disciples, he reads his Vyas Puja book every night before he goes to sleep. How nice I am, you know. Oh, you have lotus feet. They are so sweet. And then instead of Lord Chaitanya's feet on the in the temple, he'll put his own feet on the temple wall. So that's the point. So there are spiritual attachments, and we should, each and every relationship we have should be based on helping people, bringing people to Krishna consciousness. So that's the spiritual master's attitude, or the husband's attitude, or the wife's attitude, or the parent's attitude. Otherwise, it's completely mundane. So in this way, we become detached. So that's That's an initial stage. The final stage of detachment is that which was illustrated by Srila Ramananda Roy, where Ramananda Roy, and none of you should try this, Ramananda Roy was teaching the Devidasis, these young girls, how to dance and massaging their bodies and all the different places and putting on oil. And he's a man. He had a male body. And he didn't feel anything. And Lord Chaitanya said that activity, or the prerogative, that means the right to do that activity, adhikar in Sanskrit, is only with Ramananda Roy. Because he was identifying with his spiritual identity. That's the ultimate detachment from this world. When you understand, not only understand your siddhadeha, but you actually are performing manasa seva, that means internal, mental, but spiritual mental, not material mental, seva to Krishna. And that really is one of the goals of Krishna consciousness, to come to the point, I mean, obviously, probably not many of us are on that stage, but to come to the point where you actually are doing internal service to Krishna, identifying with your actual spiritual identity. We shouldn't jump prematurely, that's called sahaja, or try to jump prematurely. But really, that's where we're heading. We should understand the goal. Like if you're going somewhere in a car, you should understand what the destination is. Otherwise, I mean, you'll be just going off in all sorts of different directions. So the destination is to actually be doing that internally. And then, whatever you do externally, as described in Bhagavad Gita, eating, sleeping, rising up, whatever, evacuating, whatever, you understand you're not doing it. It's just the body doing it, the material energy doing it. And of course, you're directing the body, but it's not you doing it. So that's the ultimate stage of detachment. So somehow or other we have to figure out what stage we're at to become detached from this world and function accordingly. And we become attached to Prabhupada's books, distributing Prabhupada's books, preaching to people. I mean, so many nice things that we can become attached to in this world. Okay, and the final thing I want to mention is one other thing we learned from this particular verse is that even though Agnidra and Rishi Sringa, who we also mentioned, didn't really think that the person they were coming in contact with was a woman, they still became attracted. That indicates that there's an inherent nature. In the material world, there's an inherent nature. That means it's within the mind and body, because lust is actually within the mind and body. So the one doesn't have to be educated to be lusty. It's not that you have, like, lust school. You know, you take the child and you say, you know, I want you to learn how to be lusty and greedy and envious and everything like that. It's natural. It just gets awakened. Of course, when the little child is little, you know, when they're a little baby, they look cute as anything and they don't have any lust. At least the sexual type of lust, you know, a new baby is born. Oh, here's my little baby, little Petunia, whatever her name is. She's so cute and innocent. And later on, the things that were actually there in the beginning become manifest. It's like a seed. Even though a seed appears to be just a seed, later on, if you water it, what is actually there comes out. So when people grow up, what's actually there in the subtle body from the last lifetime becomes manifest. So it's a pretty much an automatic thing because it's there. It just needs the right stimulus. So in the same way, Krishna Bhakti Nitya Prem. So in the same way, Krishna consciousness is natural to us. That's the point I wanted to make. And so it's there in our hearts, and all we have to do is awaken it. In other words, it's not something natural. It's not an artificial imposition on the mind, as Srila Prabhupada said. It's not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's naturally there. So when preaching Krishna consciousness, if we simply expose people to prasada, the holy name, even if they can't understand the philosophy right now, they'll wake up. But I was listening to a class this morning. The Prabhupada was giving, he said, talking to some country, I forget, he said, we shouldn't speak so much philosophy to these people, just give them prasadam and chanting. And the early days, that's what attracted people. Prabhupada sat down in Tompkins Square Park. And of course, we're observing the 50th anniversary this year. He sat down in Tompkins Square Park and he simply chanted. And people came, they didn't, you know, they were intoxicated, they were crazy, whatever they were. And they came and they chanted and they woke up. They became devotees. So, jeev jago, gora chandra, bole. Kota nidra yal maya, pisa chira kolai. So, in other words, it's natural in the heart, and we have, just have to wake people up. And we have to sometimes be a little tricky when we're waking people up. You can't be like I was when I was a temple commander. I would wake the brahmacharis up by throwing water on them, playing cartels in their ears, and ultimately dragging their sleeping bags into the shower and turning the water on. That's not how we wake people up. I ultimately, you know, so you wake people up by being kind to them. So sometimes it requires, like Prabhupada said, in like a pen, out like a plow, you know, just a little bit. Tricky. You give them Krishna, you give them prasadam. Prabhupada said anyone who takes prasadam, they'll become simply wonderful, a devotee. It's because it's naturally there. Everyone is naturally a devotee. It's just a question of putting them in front of the right stimulus. Just like Agnidra and Rishi Sringa, they had the right stimulus and anyway, you know, whatever, they fell in love. But, and so with us, or with anybody, you give them the right Krishna conscious stimulus, you know, prasadam, holy name, and books, you know, distribution of books. You have so many nice Bhagavad Gita's on the ceiling here. So, which everybody's hitting their head on, you know. So, you give them the right stimulus, they wake up. So that's Krishna consciousness. Okay, so any questions or comments? Questions, comments? Yes.
Thus in the spiritual world goes only when you are clean.
Yeah. Vishaya chariya kavi shudahavi mana. You can enter into the spiritual world even while you're in this body only when you're free from all the dirty things in the heart. Those are called anarthas. That means things you don't want, like lust, anger, greed, illusion, envy, and everything like that. Yeah. One has to be completely clean. Until that point, then our attachment should be centered on the things of this world, helping people become Krishna conscious. And even when you reach that point, you center your, you are actually attached to that too. I mean, Prabhupada was very attached to carrying out the mission of his spiritual master and making people Krishna conscious. And, Bhakti Siddhanta, there's an interesting story in Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur that illustrates his attachment for bringing people back to Godhead. Once upon a time, he went to perform a deity installation. And when he went to that temple, he asked about one particular devotee. He said, where is so-and-so? Where is that devotee? And the devotee said, we had to kick him out. He was crazy. And Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I'm not doing the deity installation. I'm leaving here unless you bring him back. And they brought him back and then he was satisfied. So he said, we have to shed gallons of blood to make a devotee or leaders or whatever. We have to shed blood to make a devotee. So we should be attached to bringing people to Krishna consciousness. That's a great attachment. Not for our own false ego, but because of the compassion that we should have, reflecting the compassion of Srila Prabhupada and our spiritual master. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
About the Rishi Sringi story. So they wanted to have a person who didn't see a woman.
Yeah.
But they sent a woman.
Yeah, he could just see a woman once or something like that. I know. He didn't see a woman throughout his whole childhood. But obviously after that he got married. And he saw her. He was married to Shanti. I left that part out of the story. He didn't marry the girl who attracted him. He married Shanti, which was Ramapad's adopted daughter. But he hadn't seen a child throughout his whole life up to that, a woman up to that time. So?
I was thinking that he was not seeing a woman in the...
Yeah, even when he saw Rishi, even when he saw the beautiful lady, he didn't see a woman. He saw an attractive man. Yeah, that's one point. The point is you can't really overcome this lust by just like putting blinders on your eyes. Like, you know, I'd be giving class like this, okay. Who's that on the other side? You know. It doesn't work. Because the lust is in the heart. It's not, you know, it's not simply the body. The body is a manifestation of your previous consciousness. So you still have that consciousness. It's always there in seed form, the lust. Like even if you fast, I remember sometimes devotees would fast a lot and say, oh, now I'm free from lust. Because they had just not eaten for 2 weeks. So if you don't eat for 2 weeks, the lust won't manifest. You'll just say, oh, peace. I'm so peaceful now. I'm Krishna conscious. Of course, I can't do any service because I'm too weak, but there's no lust there. And as soon as they eat, then lust comes out again. So you can't overcome the lust in the heart by fasting. I mean, there was even one devotee who published a book called The Joys of No Sex. I mean, and he was talking about how you can overcome lust by at night sitting in ice cubes. It's a nice idea. Sitting in ice cubes at night. Cold shower at night. It doesn't really work like that. Because the lust is in the heart. You got to fry the desire seed, the papa bija. That means the seed of desire or sin. So any other questions? You got a question?
You said we should be attached to some service in Krishna consciousness.
Yeah.
What if somebody is too attached for his service, and if somebody wants to give him another service, or if like somebody wants to take it away, and all the things that he's like trying to do through the service came out, turns out that they're not, that he's like too attachment for the spiritual things, it's not so good either.
One's attached out of false ego. But one should be engaged according to one's nature in Krishna consciousness. And that's one of the main lessons in the Gita, that Arjuna wanted to do something outside of his nature. He wanted to take sannyas, basically, which is not a good idea because he had so many wives. But... So we should be attached to having some service that our mind is absorbed in 24 hours a day. I mean, we're attached to the holy names. We have our sadhana and all that. I understand that. But we should have something to do for Krishna that we're just thinking of doing, or doing better for Krishna or bigger for Krishna. Prabhupada encouraged that. He said to the Americans, what's the use of you being Americans unless you can do something wonderful? You know, so... do something. Of course, obviously we cooperate, do all those things like that. And the spiritual master says, you know, give up this service, do that service. I don't think I've done that. But anyway, but ultimately, we have to be engaged according to our nature. And we should be very, very attached. I mean, I'm very attached to my service. Very attached. I mean, Krishna changes it. I mean, obviously, one day I'll retire. Devotees are praying that I can retire. But anyway, so maybe because they want me out of the way. But anyway, I'm very attached to doing what I'm doing. I mean, I like doing what I'm doing. I mean, you shouldn't be doing something long term you don't like to do, right? I mean, that would be to live a life like that, you should be doing something you like to do. I mean, I like to help devotees, I like to give class, I like to chant, I like to do so many things. I can't think of anything I do. Well, there's one thing I do I don't like to do, sleeping. But I do it for Krishna anyway. I like to take prasadam. So we should be attached to that. I mean, over-attachment means that we're attached because of false ego. We're thinking it's ours, and the result belongs to us. That's over-attachment. Prabhupada didn't change people's service. He changed where they did service. Yes, he would take them from one part of the world to another. But he wouldn't, if someone was a preacher, Prabhupada didn't say, you know, now you become a pot washer or something like that. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
You can bring people here and they listen to music or they eat prasadam and they like it, but how to, not many move to the next level, like to find out about the last So
how to bring them to the next level. That actually requires a lot of work, and it's like networking with them. What I've discovered is that whatever program we have, whether it's a traditional program in a temple or in another center where we have yoga or something like that, it's making friends with them in constant contact that brings people to Krishna consciousness. Because people do have that need of society, friendship, and love. And, you know, one center we've established that we made practically so many devotees we can't keep up with all the people that are coming. But it requires one or two people full time texting people, calling people on the phone, visiting them in their homes, inviting them to your home. It's harder to make people just come into the temple and just sitting down in programs. That's an initial thing. The initial contact is easy. But it has to be, they have to be integrated into a society. That's why Prabhupada said, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So they have to feel, oh, here's our friends. You know, first time I came into a temple, I ran away for 2 years. Because nobody made friends with me. In fact, they told me I was going to hell. I sort of liked the kirtan. Other things were kind of unusual. But because nobody really was friendly with me, it was just preaching down to me. Had they kept contact with me, hey, so-and-so, you know, how are you doing? At that time, we didn't have mobile phones. We basically just had telegraphs. You know, telegraphs? Morse code, you know. But if they had kept touch with me, I probably would have joined 2 years earlier. So from 1969 was the first time I came to a temple, and it took me until 71 to join. And that's because I met Prabhupada. And I felt that compassion and love for Prabhupada. So it was by personal contact with Prabhupada that really got me. Otherwise, I would have been Krishna conscious on my own. I would have started my own movement. So that's really, and it's a lot of hard work. It is a lot of hard work because it's constant cultivation. And then even after someone becomes a devotee, constant cultivation, friendship, interaction. You'll see, if you try that, a lot of people will join. But it's a lot of time. It's time intensive. You know, just, how are you doing today? Can I bring you some prasadam? What do you need? Would you like to sit down and talk? Please come to my house. I'll teach you how to cook. I mean, just like the other day, even in my own house, I had cooking lessons for some new people. You know, I invited them to my house and I taught them how to cook healthy. You know, quinoa and everything. So, yeah, that's the trick. So, yeah. Hare Krishna.
Once I listened to one of your white brother's lectures on the topic of basically on the problems, how to get purified plus.
Yeah.
And he was saying basically that actually because we have a very high value system, one of our very important values is celibacy. So basically, but he was saying that because of this, maybe some devotees are hiding that they cannot follow this, like he asked us once a month for the...
Yeah.
And so forth, and also even brahmacharis and like that, that we don't really know, because everybody wants to be a perfect example in our society.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to be rejected. And he was claiming that actually once you get closer to devotees and they open their mind, you start realizing that we have actually pre-regulative system principles, not four.
Two. There's also a coffee. Anyways. Yeah.
So, what is the catch? Why is it so hard? Is there something we are missing?
It takes some time. One needs to transform it, not see it in a when you see something in a negative way. You know, the regulative principles in a negative way. They become harder to follow. When you hear prohibitions, I mean, the way the mind acts is that when someone tells me not to do something, I want to do it. So I try to phrase everything in the positive. Even when I talk about the 10 offenses on chanting, I try to phrase them in the positive rather than the negative. And then also we have to be patient. Utsahan nistya darya tatat karma pavartanat. Patience, enthusiasm, and just keep working at the same thing and not condemn someone or condemn ourselves because we're struggling. This is just being patient. It's understandable. We're in the hospital. People are getting better, but they're still a little sick. Until you get to the point of prema, then you still may have some tendency there. Even in bhava, the platform of bhava, one is not absolutely free from these things. One is free, but something can come back, like with Bart Maharaj. You know, Bart Maharaj succumbed to the attachment to the deer. So one has to be very cautious. It just takes work. I mean, every day we're working on that. But my point is, if you become attached to something in a spiritual way, like, you know, if someone looks at their husband and wife and thinks, they should concentrate on the positive. I really want to help them become Krishna conscious. I really want to help them. Then automatically the other things will fade into the background, isn't it? Because then you're thinking of your goal. Oh, I really want, like, you know, with children, same thing, or anything. Anything, you know, I just, even like I say, I have a, electronic gadgets here, so like mobile phone or something. I really want to use it in Krishna's service. You know, otherwise I'd be playing games or something, games like that. So I think whatever you have, manasa deha geha yokishmora abrilam to your pade, nandakashore, my mind, it's all yours, Krishna. And then it becomes easier. I didn't say it's easy, but easier. And every time you slip a little bit, you pick yourself up. You're learning to walk. You don't stay down on the ground. You just pick yourself up and keep going. So yeah, people are struggling. It's a fact. And then you reveal your mind to someone in confidence who you trust, who's not going to put it on the internet. And then you go on in life, that's all. It's not a difficult thing. But think positively. Don't think negatively. Don't think, oh, I got these four regulated principles. Oh, my God. Why didn't they pick something easier? Like no mushrooms or something. Even people can't even follow the one of chocolate. What does it mean? Because chocolate's not a regulated principle. Thank God. So, so, I guess time, right? All right, so I guess that's it. So, all glory is to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.